Currently coming, interviews. This is Valorizers with Steve Bass.
A very good Thursday, Rays fans. Sirius 219, XM 201. seriously, Sirius 219. XM 201, Sports Zone 964. You're listening to Sirius XM Online and at our website, stevevick.com. You would think after 15 years. We should maybe think about changing the name of the show. It should be perhaps At the Races with Graham Motion. how about H. Graham Motion yesterday for all of us? For all of us, right? Unbelievable. Graham's appearance on Tuesday, talk about timely. I asked him for Monday, and he begged off and said, is tomorrow okay? And of course. So then getting him for Tuesday, looking ahead, you know, not just at the Wednesday starts. I mean, he's got plenty more, including in the Sycamore, but specifically, the best paying result, and my tendency is to go get the maiden specials, get the first time starters covered, or horses that are coming back for a second start, 2-year-olds, and so that's my inclination. So I went through two or three 2-year-olds, and he volunteered when he said. You skipped right over script, right? That's the way he said it. Arthur Hancock Homebred, by algorithms, out of the First Samurai mare. And, I got to tell you something. I should really check in with Bernie Sams, and maybe this is something for Sid. This sort of fits the conversation we had yesterday, partly where we talked about when Creative Cause came up. Because First Samurai has had a sneaky good career, and specifically as a stallion, and had a nice, for our friend Lansden Robbins and Bruce Lunsford, and his name is turned, and I'm excited because we've got the Irish War Cry. Speaking of Graham Motion, we've got the Irish War Cry filly, Countess Constance, who was out of a First Samurai mare. But the point is, First Samurai's name is turning up very frequently. I've got so many, PPs and charts here, but First Samurai is going to end up being long-term. I think just this is, speculative based on, incidental perusal of tons and tons of charts and PPs. But it feels like First Samurai is making an impact as a broodmare sire. That's my point. Dilly was the mare that produced Script, and so now an allowance winner and nicely handled by Johnny. What a night. And it's funny because this race, as I wrote in the write-up, this race really felt like a spot that was going to be, as well as the, of course, that maiden race we'll talk about in a second. We got some Keeneland and some Indy to quickly talk about, and then I'll lay out what's going on this morning. We got plenty to do. This race felt like it was wide open and fun. I mean, I put Script on top in part because of what Graham had offered, but in addition, you looked up and down. That Two Birds looked appealing to me. The Jeff Hiles making a second start on grass, having really run very well at Kentucky Downs. Master of the Ring from the outside post had to be considered at least. I think the outside posts were compromised a little bit in this. But, all the usual suspects or, the anticipated suspects, look at the board. to give you an idea. Policy Option went favored, but it could have been just one of maybe three horses or so that could have been considered as a possible favorite. I mean, this all kind of circles back to what we talked about, you know, Nick Tamaro with the unenviable task of making these morning lines with, you know, 1, 10, 11, 12 horse field after another. Script goes off at 6:42 and pays 14.84 to win. Baj was second, and certainly was, you know, Baj ran very well, actually, was, you know, near the lead, basically, you know, stalking two birds. And Panarash, a little under 7-1. Baj was 8-1. Policy Option favored at 7-2. And so things like the Exacta paid 100, paid 99.25. The Try paid $910 for a buck, $455.94 for 50 cents. This sequence, and I missed the pick four because of the baby race, which we'll talk about right now, because Graham, not only did Graham deliver Script, he also made it clear that Diamonds If You Do had every reason to debut nicely, and boy, did she. But she was could not withstand the stretch duel with Luis Saez and Beautifulness. And in the end, Eddie Keneally, he's magically delicious. In the end, Keneally, who is, you know, okay with firsters, you know, I don't know. This was a tough horse to elevate, although the dam, Michelle, was really quite nice, if you remember her. But she really got good. She was actually fast at three and then got better as a four-year-old and a stake winner, actually. And Eddie, you know, it's funny, Eddie, that's now back-to-back first-time starter wins for Eddie, because he won with Braganza, who was a three-year-old filly. But this Beautifulness was not the easiest to, you know, to use prominently. So, 21.78, and as it happens, Diamonds If You Do ended up going favored, Graham's horse. And then there was the Brad Cox, that the Alice Look, Miha, the Alejandro sibling out of the Rachel Alexandra Grant daughter. Miha was an okay fourth in here. It took Alejandro time too to break through. So this was a tough result to scare up. But Graham's horse gave us everything. I mean, if she and it's not paying $3,100, even close to $3,100 if Graham wins. But it would have paid okay. $500, maybe a little more, you know, given the size of the fields. Graham also, because it just did not let up yesterday with Graham Motion. He also won with the horse wasn't Laurel? Not Laurel. Where was it? Oh my God, Delaware. The horse at Delaware that we talked about. I mean, just unbelievable. it came within, it came within a head of sweeping with the three horses that we talked about with him on Tuesday. So thanks to Graham, and we, you know, certainly appreciate that horse. By the way, was Palata Sisters, the Cairo Prince, and this one also had a pedigree and a half. An Airdrie. This is all Governor Jones. Biofuel. Remember Biofuel? We used to talk about with the fabulous Reed Baker. I saw Reed somewhere earlier this year. I saw him at OBS. At OBS, where we saw Reed Baker. In fact, we talked, I think, right? Reed, we slapped the microphone in his hand. But Biofuel, the wonderful, she was a multiple, Canadian graded stake winner, but she was also a multiple graded grade one P placed, and has been an okay brood. I think this is her third or fourth foal biofuel. This is a Cairo Prince filly that it looks to me like was wearing little red feather jacket, and it looks to me like they recently bought in, but it Matticat and Airdrie itself and the governor. So Pelota Sisters and Script come through. Paid $7 and change. Paid $7.40 at Delaware and $14.84 at Keeneland. So the rest of that sequence, by the way, Forbidden Secret absolutely romped. Went off as third choice with American Blaze. I keyed off of American Blaze. That was as a value, but ended up somehow American Blaze ended up taking all the money and going off at under 7-2. Bourbon Spirit was the second choice, actually, at 377, and then came Forbidden Secret. So 972 was a very palatable and then some price. I picked Forbidden Secret second, expecting the Outwork colt to be, a little bit, bet more than that. I was surprised, actually, when the chart came out. So Forbidden Secret, this Todd Pletcher for the Brunettis. Congratulations to the very familiar jacket, the white jacket with the red dots. And then in the nightcap, Bay Street Money. This is another interesting case. Coleridge took all the money. We'll talk to Nick tomorrow again and see if he's got some further thoughts as he's, I'm sure he's adjusting as he goes here with these morning lines at Keeneland. Because the money floats in directions that it isn't necessarily, I'm sure some of it is figures, sheet figures and so forth that, alert you to certain horses. But for Coleridge, somehow Coleridge, let me see, Coleridge was, I'm almost positive, was like 12 to 1. And I don't know. I mean, I was aware of Coleridge, but for Coleridge to be bet down to 5-2, what was so wonderful? I mean, last out winner, okay, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, Bay Street Money ran very well, and Sandy Goldfarb. This is an Adina bred 5-year-old gelding out of the wonderful Collect the Cash. The Dinoformer mare. Remember Collect the Cash? For those of you in New York that know Dr. John Cheros, vet to the stars and a hero at Ground Zero, 9/11, helping the search dogs and North Shore Animal League and so forth. And the pond conservation group. But John and I had the funniest. There was a not only was there Collect the Cash, but do you remember her? It feels like she was a frequent foe. You'll be happy. and so I remember. I want to say it was a Belmont day, and in fact, it might have even been one of those race 17 or 18 after the Belmont. And we put together an exacta, Collect the Cash and you'll be happy. And it became a running joke forever afterward. And here it is again, making another appearance. late in life, to say the least. In fact, now I'm obliged. Now I'm going to go look at this, because this is what we do here. Because we're ridiculous. Collect the Cash. And I don't... what's your guess on who trained her? Because I do not Joe O. I did not remember that at all. How about that? Well, let me see here. All right, Fairgrounds, Belmont Allowance. Maybe this is it. No, this is May 28th, so that wouldn't be Belmont Day. But let's see. Nope, that was against Sharp Apple. I'll find it. I will absolutely find this. And maybe it was at Saratoga. Might have been Saratoga, actually. I do see a couple of wins. In 2000, she won. And speaking of collect the cash, she was a Queen Elizabeth winner, the QE2, which they'll run on Saturday. And, boy, Chad Brown looks tough with McKillick. Then she did not run well in that Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf. But collect the cash, a wonderful Dynaformer mare. Well, here's, okay, she did run against You'll Be Happy, but You'll Be Happy was sixth that day. This was August 27th at Saratoga, and in fact, that might have even been, that could have even been a Travers Day, frankly. And let's see about July 30th. She won two races that year at Saratoga. Now, I get, maybe the exacta never happened, but it, in our minds, it just, I'll never forget that. Collect the cash and you'll be happy. Running against each other. Anyway, fun day. I really enjoyed the Keeneland action yesterday, and, you know, missed the pick four, but cashed a couple of tickets, and it was worth the effort. Same thing is true as well at Indy. And nice job by Rachel, Racing Rachel McLaughlin. Thanks to Rachel for visiting. And the two stakes, she was really good with the, she really helped with the boys race. She nailed the boys race, including with the big price. That killer hot rod she suggested was 18-1 and was a good clunk up third. Mansfield Tiger, the winner there at 5-2, beat Too Bad Justice, went off at 3-5. And was really never, threatened, you know, and ranged up. But Mansfield Tiger, Sammy Bermudez, for Tim Eggleston. And as you heard from Rachel yesterday, Tim Eggleston going good. Mansfield Tiger, a Pataki kid. Love Pataki kid. Bred by Dana Myers. And, of course, this, the Illinois Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. With their big sale on Saturday. Matt Kwiatkowski and Jason Kaler own, and in fact, they ran 1-2. They weren't complaining because Eggleston, with the 3-5 favorite, was second as well at the short price. So they run 1-2. Pretty nice for them. Dr. Gorham, third with Killer Hot Rod at 18-1, which at least boosted the try a little bit. Paid $40. When it came to the girls' race, I hope I helped you a little bit. No More Fake News and Speedy Delivery. They both figured, and I suggested ZZ's Red, 9-1, came up, helped the, you know, helped the try and the super. Try paid $140 for a buck, so that was okay. But No More Fake News, who's been very good, Gary Patrick owns, breeds, trains, and No More Fake News with Deshaun, and was actually 9-2, paid $10.80, which was a nice number. And of course, this one, the notional that Rachel talked about, and we were big fans of notional. Yeah, the late Bill Curran, right? No, I'm thinking of Stormello. Notional was Doug O'Neill, maybe, right? All right. Help me out, Harvard. Where's that line from? A lot of movie shtick this week. That was fun yesterday. And what a great response we got to. I'm going to send later. I'll put up the link to, I said Updike yesterday. That was embarrassing. John Cheever, not John Updike, wrote The Swimmer. I realized later not so good. I'll put up the link to the story if you haven't found it. If you're a New Yorker, if you're a New Yorker reader, you get it, easily. We're going to have Mary Perdue next and first, not just next. Case, let me send you her number. I have been very late with this, and Mary's book out from the University of Kentucky Press, of course, Landaluce, and you know, one of those horses that for certain, you know, for certain fans and players is a horse is kind of a touchstone horse. And the book's been out, was out this summer, and Mary's doing something fun this weekend, and I wanted to publicize that, but more importantly, wanted, you know, to let people know who weren't aware of her book, that, and you may be a Landaluce fan that that didn't know. So we're going to publicize it right now. Mary's going to join us for about 20, 25 minutes. Jim Gluckson is going to visit. I want to re-emphasize what I mentioned yesterday about the full nomination, because now you got 48 hours to save yourself a bunch of money, because the $400 that you can spend by Saturday compared to, you know, the much larger increments that nominating your foals for Breeders' Cup will become. And we're also going to go over with Jim the pre-entry system. I'm a week off. It's been this way since the summer. Everything is a week off. I said yesterday the pre-entries. Pre-entries are not till the 24th because of Far Hills. It just feels like it's later in the month than it is. Is anybody else dealing with this? It's very strange. Because usually Far Hills, and then the next after Far Hills, the next Friday, I'll head to wherever Breeders' Cup's going to be. So, to my way of thinking, we're on top of the pre-entries. But we do have an extra week. So, another week. So, it's we got an, and I don't leave. I kept telling Tina I'm leaving Friday. Next Friday, and then I realized, no, I'm not. I'm not leaving until the 28th. It's strange. Tina also, as we wait for Mary to join us, the Halloween situation. For those of you that so look forward to coming to our house, I'm not sure that there's going to be Halloween offerings at our house. Tina says that nobody's coming anymore. It's dwindled down to nothing, and so she's going to keep the light off, and or maybe just leave a bowl, you know, on the front stoop, and let kids, you know, self serve. But she, you know, because every year I leave for Breeders' Cup, and I don't give her any help. I always talk about how excited I am, you know, for the kids to come for, and then we don't go. At least last year when I was, you know, infirmed with a post heart attack and couldn't go to Breeders' Cup. At least I got, and I don't know, we must have had 30 kids last year. We used to have, when I first moved here in 99, when I tell you, one year I had to go leave the house and go drive to the grocery store and get more candy. We must have had 150 kids. And now it's down to nothing. Mary Perdue's joining us. Mary, how many kids do you get for Halloween?
Well, not 150. I would say we probably get in the 30 to 40 range, just like you're describing. But I remember one year that I didn't have enough candy, and I had to go get it. And they hadn't even taken it out of the boxes, and I had to open the box with my key from my keychain. I was so desperate for candy.
That is funny. When I grew up, our house was my mother loved Halloween, and she used to get full size Hershey bars and Hershey bars with almonds. And
oh wow!
So you know, we were one of those houses that everybody had. Yeah, everybody had. You know,
everybody
got notations. And,
that's a deluxe treat.
Exactly. Too funny. Well, speaking of treats, it's a treat to have you on, and I apologize for the delay in getting to you, but you know, the book has been so well received, and talking about a horse in you know, recent racing history that's still in people's memories that has got a absolute rabid following. And first and foremost, how did you land on Landaluce as a topic?
Well, it's an interesting story, at least to me. I remembered her. I date myself when I tell this story, but I was living in Manhattan and working as a magazine editor in the 80s when she raced. And I heard about her and knew about her in Manhattan. Back then, there wasn't any horse racing shows. Cable was just starting. ESPN had just started. There really weren't very many ways to see horses race live except to go to the track. And I read about her in the trade press and in the New York Times, which was remarkable in and of itself that the New York Times would be interested in a two-year-old filly who'd only raced one or two times in California. But she always stuck with me. I always thought that she was, like many people thought at the time, that she was as good as Ruffian and was compared to Ruffian by veteran horsemen who had seen both of them run. She was quite remarkable.
And we'll get to, you know, the splashy mercurial career portion. But how, I mean, how interested in racing were you at that time in you know, the early 80s?
Well, it's funny because I have no connection to racing through my family. No one in my family is even remotely interested in horses at all, much less thoroughbred racing. But I have always just loved it and always followed it and always wanted to be part of it from when I was a kid. And I can't explain it. I don't know where it comes from. But she just stuck with me. When I had a bucket list birthday and I decided I was going to get more involved and do more horsey things and racing things. And so I went to the Keeneland Library in 2017 just because I had never been there. And I wanted to see it and I wanted to go. And I walked in and I was so ignorant, I didn't know that it wasn't a lending library, that you couldn't just walk in there and take a book out. You had to make a request and they bring you what you're looking for. And I don't know if you've been there, but it's so beautiful inside. It to me, it's like a cathedral of racing. I mean, the ceilings are high. It's floor-to-ceiling glass. It's just a beautiful place to be, and you're surrounded by all these horse racing artifacts and treasures. And so they said, well, is there a horse that you're interested in? And I thought, well, I can't say obvious ones like Secretariat or Man of War or American Pharoah. So I said the first horse that came in my mind, which was her, Landaluce. And they brought me a file that had some clippings in it and some pictures, but that was it. And I said, you mean this is all you've got? There isn't a book about this horse? And he said, evidently not. So that's when I got the idea. Why not me?
Why not you? So let's pick it up from that's pretty funny. Let's pick it up
is.
From there. And did you start to do some work and outline and then start to look for a publisher? I mean, obviously, if you were working, what magazine were you working for?
Well, I was doing some freelance work for some websites, but I wasn't. You know, it wasn't a full-time gig for me at that time. I just on my own decided to start researching it, and I'd worry about it later. I wanted to do it that badly. And the whole first year was research. I did write some few chapters, and then I got stuck on one chapter because I was having trouble finding information about her co-breeder, Frances Kernan, who bred her with Leslie Combs. And of course, there's tons of stuff about Leslie Combs, but not many people have heard of Frances Kernan. And I wanted him to get credit for being the co-breeder. And so I reached out to Ed Bowen, whom I had met at a book signing in Lexington a couple years before that, and he took an interest in it and read a couple of the chapters I'd read by that time, that I'd written by that time, and he recommended the University Press of Kentucky and the Horses in History series that they have. So I did a proposal for them, and they gave me a contract, and then I had to do it.
I love it. At that point, what are you going to do, right? You
right.
You've convinced some
people.
But
it was good because it forced me to finish it, you know, in a timely manner. Otherwise, I'd still be working on it.
Give people the thumbnail sketch. We know. I called her Mercurial, which is probably an apt description. And personally, for me, I was in college and just getting out of college, and I really was not a fan at that point, and I was not a player at that point. So my awareness of her and her career, came later with interest in the sports history.
Right.
And give everybody, you mentioned Frances Kernan and Spendthrift, Leslie Combs, talk about French and Beale and the ownership and how her career got started with Wayne.
Well, it really started with a horse named Terlingua, which was the first thoroughbred that Wayne Lucas bought at Keeneland ever. And I believe it was 1977 when he went to the Keeneland yearling sale, and nobody knew who he was because he was just beginning to train thoroughbreds in 1977. And a lot of his quarter horse owners came along with him to try to be in thoroughbreds. And he bought Terlingua for Beale and French. And it was the only horse he bought at that auction, a daughter of Secretariat, who turned out to be a superstar as well. And the success of Terlingua encouraged Beale and French to keep going in thoroughbreds. So a few years later, Wayne goes back to Keeneland in 1981 and finds this daughter of Seattle Slough from his first crop, and thinks that she's the best yearling he's ever seen in his life, and buys her for $650,000, which he considers a bargain, and turned out it was, and purchased her on behalf of Beale and French. So that's how they all got started.
There's so much here, and you frame... You frame everything with a lot of underpinning, which, when you talk about a horse that only, ran five times, it's necessary. But, you kind of have the wide base of the pyramid that then distills, down to this story. And there's a lot to educate people in terms of historic, the historic elements that went into this.
Yes. And I, it was really important to me when I wrote this book that it showed how great horses affect people. All her connections, of course, breeder, owner, trainer, but also the fans, just the emotions that great horses arouse in people, and how inspiring they can be and how much people take it to heart. I mean, to me, that's the best of thoroughbred racing. And I wanted her to be remembered, of course. That was my main reason for writing the book. But I also was hoping that by telling her story, people would come to understand what thoroughbred racing really is. Like you said, how there are all these intertwining, underpinning things. These horses don't just appear, and a lot of thought and effort and sweat and energy goes into making them, getting them to the track, and helping them be successful. The fact that she was able to touch so many people was one of the main reasons to write the story.
the John White, our friend John White, wrote the foreword, and John has about as deep an understanding and appreciation for the game's history as any turf writer and individual involved in the game. And John was also uniquely positioned to contribute to the book that way, given that he saw all of her starts and was working for the forum at the time. And John really sets the stage here, and for those like me, I'm 62 and it was not yet following a horse like this the way you're explaining. And I was in college and so it's other than Derby, how much and Triple Crown, how much racing are you consuming if you weren't imbued with the bug and with familial ties. I mean, other than my grandfather taking me to Aqueduct as a teen. So for me, it really captures just how much of a monster story she was, and starting with the price tag and then with the way her career commenced. I mean, talk about the building, because she's winning races, by monstrous open lengths.
Well, in her very first start, her maiden race at Hollywood Park, which was a 6-furlong race, she was ridden in all of her races by Hall of Famer Lafitte Pincai. He rode her the very first time in the maiden race, had never worked her, had never even seen her, until he got on her for that race. And she won that race, I think, in 6 furlongs in 108 4/5, something like that, which was a world record for a juvenile filly around a turn in the United States. When he got off of her after that race, he looked at the clock at the tote board and thought that it had malfunctioned, which, does happen. He was convinced that she couldn't have gone that fast because it seemed so effortless to him. He wasn't asking her. And yet, in her very first start, she posts a time like that. Later that day, on the same card at Hollywood, was the Hollywood Express for older male sprinters in contention for national sprint championship. Lafitte also rode in that race the same day. She beat the time of those older male horses going the same distance on the same track on the same day by almost a second in her very first start. So she had a lot of buzz around her after only one start. But the second start was the Hollywood Lassie Stakes, which is really was a sire, because remember, she was from his first crop, and books were a lot smaller back then. So she ran that race and beat her own time. She ran it in 108 flat and demolished the field by 21 lengths, again, seemingly without being urged or pressed. Never, ever again in Hollywood Park history would there be a race won by that margin of victory at any distance, and it was a 6-furlong race.
The romping going short and during the summer at Hollywood, including the 20-plus length world record around a turn, just kind of sets things up for the exploits of the summer, and actually doesn't show up at Del Mar until the debutante, and stretches out to the mile at that point, and then comes the Oak Tree meet at Santa Anita.
Right, and those races, the debutante and the Oak Leaf, one at a mile and one at a mile and a 16th, established her as an early book favorite for the Kentucky Derby as a 2-year-old filly. Remember, Genuine Risk had just won the race a couple years prior. And she proved in those two races that she wasn't just a speedball. You know, she handled two turns and distances of over a mile and won convincingly. So, again, and again, you know, seemingly without being asked, that just doesn't happen. For a two-year-old filly, she was 5 for 5 from early July till the end of October.
Well, the story takes about as tragic a turn as one can take, which we'll touch on in a second. We should also include, because it's an important part of the story, what this, you know, what her exploits meant for Seattle Slough with his first
crop.
Well,
yes, I mean, she was the first champion for him, and coming out of his very first crop and being so precocious so early in the year, she had that 21 length victory in the Lassie like the week before the Keeneland yearling sales of that next year, and she had a full sister named Royal Straight Flush. Landa Lucy sold for $650. The following year, her full sister sold for $1.5 million in 1982 dollars. So she really, really propelled Slough into the top echelon, not only of freshman sires, but just North American sires in general. And I'm not trying to say she was the only one, because he had Sloopy, he had Slough of Gold, he had Adored, all of those from the first crop, which is truly amazing, given the fact that he only had 45 mares. But she was one of only six Seattle Slough yearlings that were even offered for sale at Keeneland the year that she came to auction. After her, his values soared as a stallion, his fees soared, and the price of his yearlings soared. And he was competing at that time with the Northern Dancers. So it's almost impossible to overstate how much she helped him.
Should, and if we're going to talk about breeding, this is actually something that I could throw to Sid next week. One of the reasons that Lucas was even aware of potential here, of, you know, of anything coming out of Strip Poker, was because he had Strip Poker's first foal, Clout, who was a stake horse.
That's right.
Seven, 8 years earlier.
Right. But if you ask him, and I did, and he said it elsewhere, he at that time was unique in the way that he approached assessing yearlings and buying yearlings. He claims he did not even look at the catalog page. He just went around and looked at every horse on the grounds based purely on physicals. And when he knew that she was a daughter of Slough when she was let out for him, but he didn't know when he saw her the first time that she was the full sister to Clout. He only found that out when he went back and looked at the catalog. But he maintains that he picked her out based purely on physical, that she was the best yearling he'd ever seen in his life.
Well,
when he saw that, when he saw that she was a foal to Clout, that increased his excitement for buying her. Yes.
Yeah, and Clout, talk about you know, late 70s, early 80s, or 80, made 318,000, won 14 times and 61 starts.
He loved the turf course at Belmont. He set, I think, track records or stakes records there. He was a very hard grinding, hard trying horse, and I think Wayne had a lot of affection for him.
And it's funny because he, one thing that he is notable, he won some stakes that we now know as by other names, including the Edgemere and the Brighton,
yeah,
Beach. which is kind of fun. I love that. You know, the,
also, the Golden
beaches.
Joey.
The Golden Joey?
Yeah, Golden Joey.
Well, Landalus is making headlines and gaining a following is basically arcing toward a season-ending start in the Starlet, when one of the most deadly illnesses that a horse can contract, colitis X, which is just awful and devastating. And she contracts it, and there's not a lot of horses are able to withstand it, the ravage of it.
Well,
although
actually,
Slough had, right?
Actually, there was some debate about that. He did get very sick between his third and 3-year-old year and 4-year-old year, but there's conflicting accounts about what caused it and what he actually had. In her case, I did a lot of research on this, and it wasn't pleasant to do, but it's an important part of the story. It looks like she really didn't die of colitis X, although that was believed at the time. The official cause of death in the autopsy was a bacterial infection that might have started as a virus, but they never found any trace of it. And it started as a respiratory infection, but then it spread pretty much to every part of her body. And, you know, of course, Wayne and all the veterinarians, everybody tried everything they could to save her, but she got sick, I think, on a Monday. Was the first day she spiked a fever, and she died 6 days later on a Sunday, heartbreakingly, on the day that she would have run in the Hollywood Starlet.
The news accounts, when you're telling a story like this, Mary Perdue's our guest. Her Landalusi book has been so well received, and tells a story that, reiterate, I think a generation or maybe more than a generation of fans and players and stakeholders are probably not aware of, because for whatever reason, I suppose, a 5-star career contributes, but she does not receive the same adoration and long running heroine status probably that she's due.
Right, and it's interesting to me because in modern horses, in modern racing, careers are so much shorter now. Justify will can be in the Hall of Fame with, 6 starts? Granted, 3 of them were really important. But horses are not expected to run for as long and have as many races in their career as back then. I really regret, like everyone else, that she didn't get a chance to prove what she could have done. I think a case can be made that if she had lived just 3 weeks longer and won the Hollywood Starlet, which she was basically a shoe-in for, that was a filly race, at Hollywood Park, at 1 1/16, and also she was supposed to run in the Hollywood Futurity against Colts 2 weeks after that, same distance, same track. If she had won both of those races, I do believe she'd be in the Hall of Fame today, because she would have been the first juvenile filly millionaire. And she would have been 7 for 7. And she was the first juvenile filly to win an Eclipse Award racing exclusively in California, which had not been done before. Huh. And she was the first Eclipse Award winner for Wayne Lucas so early in his thoroughbred career. So she managed to accomplish a lot running only 5 times and not living very long.
You know, I just pulled up Steve Christ's piece. Steve, of course, was the correspondent at the Times covering racing. And it's under Steve's byline, Lando Lucy dies from virus, two-year-old latest struck in a year of misfortunes. And I'll put that out. It's interesting the way Steve frames it, along with Timely Writer and Perot and Conquistador Cielo. Interesting. And I've never seen this piece, so
it's a measure of how much she meant to so many people that when she died, that was reported on the front page of the New York Times, which, I mean, a two-year-old filly from California on the front page of the New York Times, that's how many people she touched in such a brief time.
Mary Perdue is with us, and the book has been. Talk a little bit about your experience and you know how the summer unfolded. You've done quite a bit of publicity, and I'm sure you've been regaled with appreciations from Land of Lucy fans. You know, worldwide.
Well, I've been trying because I knew that. Well, I hope that. There were enough people that remembered her now that are still around that would be interested in the book. But my bigger goal was, of course, to have people learn about her who didn't ever hear of her. And to explain her place in racing history and to try to paint a picture of how truly extraordinary she was so that she would be appreciated by a bigger audience. And that's why I've been trying really hard to make people aware of her and how truly special she was.
Well, and in fact, on the website, there's a full website devoted to Mary's book. Mary Perdue is with us talking about Land of Lucy, the story of Seattle Slough's first champion. And learn more about the brilliant daughter of Seattle Slough, whom turf writer Ann D. Byer once called conceivably the greatest filly that ever lived. So if it's new to you, or whether you lived through the amazing summer and into the fall of 82 with Land of Lucy, you're going to enjoy this, and particularly those that that appreciate the game's history. There's everything here, that the sales, the breeding, racetracks that are gone from the landscape, and Mary has traversed all of it. Mary, talk about this promotion this weekend.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to let people know that John White, who you mentioned, he and I will be at Santa Anita this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. We'll be signing books outside the gift shop, I think from 12 to 1 and 4 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. But we will also be there to present the trophy for the winner of the Enochia Stakes on Sunday, which is a race that Land of Lucy ran and won 40 years ago. So we're excited about that. We're also sponsoring a fan contest. Anyone can enter. All they have to do is send their memories or what Land of Lucy means to them to landoflucybook@gmail.com. The winner will join us in the winner's circle to present the trophy for the Enochia on Sunday and also received a copy of the book signed by John and me.
Wonderful. Now, for those of you that are headed to the great race place this weekend, and we'll remind everybody again tomorrow when we get into the weekend action. That's perfect, actually, with the Enochia being run this weekend. That's ideal. And for those if people wanted to that are far flung, Mary, will you have some copies that you both will sign that people can order and have shipped?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if they're willing to pay shipping from Santa Anita Gift Shop, yes. And there are other bookstores that have signed copies, but I don't think you want me to list them all. but, yeah, I mean, there will be signed copies available from the Champions Gift Shop at Santa Anita.
Well, and then, of course, you know, the book is widely available wherever you buy your the countless parade of wonderful books about the history of Thoroughbred racing. And in our, you know, our show, Mary, I'm sure that, you know, you can appreciate, I mean, our audience just absolutely has a voracious appetite for, you know, for racing books. And we really enjoy these conversations and celebrating, you know, those that, you know, devote, in a lot of cases, devote a lot of time to the research and, you know, telling these stories. So having, I don't want to say obscure, but let's say an obfuscated candidate for a book in Landa Lucy, having her celebrated this way is wonderful. And it'll...
Well, thank you.
You know, it'll be a wonderful addition to everybody's equine library.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for giving me a chance to tell her story. I always enjoy talking about her.
and now you've got something memorialized. And are you considering any other equine title, or are you thinking about another? seeing as how well this has gone.
I've been asked that a lot, and it surprised me the first couple of times. To be honest, I have ideas, but I don't have any firm plans at the moment. I'm focusing on this one and enjoying this one and spending a lot of time and effort promoting it. So maybe I'll have time to think about that when this dies down a little bit.
Well, delighted to have Mary Perdue, who you can follow on Twitter, Mary Perdue. Very, very simple, spelled like the chicken, not like the university. Perdue.
Exactly.
Do you introduce yourself that way?
Well, people always ask if I'm related, and I said I'm sure we are in some ways, but I don't know what they are.
Pretty funny. Well, yeah, Perdue with an E, not with a U.
That's right.
Mary, delightful. Kentucky Press, University of Kentucky Press, who we celebrate constantly. You've got, of course, if you're going to go to their website, which we certainly recommend, and independent bookstores. We'll talk later this morning to Dave Hill, and Dave always celebrates independent bookstores to find things, not just the gigantic monolith that's.
Right.
Destroying America's retail landscape. But if you go to the University of Kentucky Press, their website is a delight, and you'll find a million titles. We'd say this all the time. And right now, of course, between your book and Paul Volpone and Lenny Shulman's book about Phyllis George, you can buy, and of course the Jennifer Kelly titles as well, and I mean so many more. They are an absolute godsend to
and she has a new one
fans.
Coming out. Jennifer does.
Yes, she does. The Foxes of Bel Air. And
that's right.
Yeah. At her. Her backstory is very similar to yours, Mary. She had no connection,
yes.
and she wasn't even in Manhattan. She was, you know, she was really godforsaken in terms of being someplace where there was no connection to racing. this was so much fun.
Well, thank you,
Mary,
Steve.
Not at all. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy John. Have you met John in person yet?
No, we've corresponded for several years, and I feel like I know him, but I haven't actually met him face-to-face, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, depending on how tall you are, I don't know if face-to-face is going to work, but because... because John's the size of a power forward in the NBA. So I don't know how tall you
good
are.
Good to know.
Yeah, you may wear some lifts if you want to meet him literally face to face. Mary, this was so much fun, and get out ahead of your Halloween candy.
Yes, I won't wait until the last night this time.
I love
Thank
it.
Thank you, Steve. I've really enjoyed it.
So did I. Mary Perdue, everybody, Land of Lucy. And this has got to be on your shelf and sooner than later. And if you're going to be around Santa Anita and Champions, you know, the gift shop right there on the walk from the paddock to the track, she and John will be together. And go say hello and get a signed copy. Land of Lucy, the story of Seattle Slew's first champion. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, Jim Gluckson, BC racing guy. Jim is going to join us. We got some BC business to do, but he's also going to pay tribute. And it's amazing that Jim brought this up without me prompting, because I didn't get a chance to ask him about it, but John Parada sent me a text yesterday and asked me, has anybody brought up the fact that Jack Will passed away in the last couple of weeks? And I had not seen anything in print. I mentioned to you yesterday about Eddie Broome and John Prugnow and Jack Will's passing. Is absolutely another of a generation and a name that people will of a certain age are going to appreciate. And Jim wants to talk about Jack, which is 100% welcome. Another famed publicist and scribe, turf scribe from the Mid-Atlantic region, and later, one of the coterie with Pete Axtell. In fact, Ed Seltzer's Ed and Bev's Axtell namesake ran okay yesterday. Chased home the winner in the nightcap. Ran third. Ran a good third in the allowance. I told John about that horse that Ed had named a horse after Ax. So Jimmy's going to join us, and we'll do some Breeders' Cup business, but I think some stories about Jack Will will really be appreciated. Tony Black in a little bit. I want to get Sean Clancy in here as well, ahead of Far Hills and Dave Hill in Hour 3 with his NFL takes. In addition, I mentioned this, right, yesterday, and you may have seen that I sent out the link to the amazing story he wrote in 2014. I asked him because, his son is something of a chess prodigy, and I constantly make Searching for Bobby Fischer references with Dave, and do you want a tuna sandwich? I'm going to get you a tuna sandwich. Bill Macy with a very minor role in Searching for Bobby Fischer. But I asked him about this online chess cheating scandal and the phishing scandal. Because for those that claim, quote-unquote, only in horse racing, you got to be kidding, right? If there's money involved, people are going to cheat, and people are going to try to cheat. So as it happens, Dave was not just familiar with the chess, but he had written a story 8 years ago about a famous fishing contest cheating scandal. Not a new story. Not even close to a new story. Goes back to almost the origins of competitive fishing. Competitive fishing. Yikes. Back after this, Jim Gluckson at the races. Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act.